Hey, Anna, did you know that I am a solar system ambassador?
Of course you are.
Well, it's a program that NASA does called the Solar System Ambassadors, one of the coolest titles to have in the universe. I mean, I just throw that around everywhere I go. I'm like, Solar System Ambassador coming through.
Restaurant reservations.
Yes. By the way, put it under SSA, Solar System Ambassador.
Do you have like business cards or like a badge?
I do. I have a badge, which is pretty impressive.
Joke?
No, it's for real. It's for real program. And what it does is we, because I'm part of the group. Since 2001, totally. We do programs for people, for the public. So we talk about everything that's up in space. We talk about science missions. We talk about Cassini. We talk about Hubble, all these things. And then we get the coveted title Solar System Ambassador.
Wow.
Would you like to be one?
You're like, you're not made of the right stuff.
Well, you do have to go through a grueling process to become one. I don't know.
Is it filling out a form?
Yeah, pretty much just filling out a form. So if you fill out a form, that's pretty good. I don't know if they do background checks or fingerprints.
Oh, then in that case, no. Got some skeletons in your closet.
Well, speeding tickets. You could okay, rival.
You're not perfect.
Rival the speed of the. Oh, that's one of the questions. Can you drive a car faster than the space shuttle?
And I could say yes, and I have the proof.
Yes, here it is.
Between the years of 2000 and 2001.
All right, well, we'll sign you up here because this is exciting. Because you can be one of the proud, the few, the. Spacey. Well, from the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm Dean Regas, and this is Looking Up.
And I'm Anna Heeman, and we're both from the Cincinnati Observatory. Dean's the astronomer, and I have a lot of questions. In this episode, we're going to talk about the NASA Solar System Ambassador Program with Kay Ferrari. So a solar system ambassador, is that what you tell all the groups you work with?
Pretty much.
Look, kids, the presence of a solar system, NASA.
Yeah. I mean, I've been called a lot of worse things, that's for sure. So I'll take it. I'll take it. And so I've been a member there since 2001. Mm-hmm. And it got me thinking about all the programs that we do at the observatory and all the programs that informal educators like myself do, like if you're in a museum or in a planetarium or aquarium or zoo. I think it's a really important job to do these things, to like give kids and adults these experiences, these field trip experiences.
You're speaking with such warm fuzzies about it. That's surprising me.
Well, it comes with the badge. Like, that's for sure.
With the badge.
I should have brought it with me.
You really should have.
Yeah.
We'll post it on our Facebook.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I like to have things for the Facebook page, and that'll get some good. Yeah.
I especially appreciate the ambassadors still using my picture from 2001. I appreciate that on my badge. So I get my 17-year-old picture up there. I look like a young kid. It's great.
I thought you meant in the promotion. No. They were like using your picture.
That's right. On
I was
the badge.
Confused. Right? Yeah. Like.
Yeah. So when I do show the badge, people are like, you haven't looked like that in a long
That's right.
time.
Mr. Who is this?
Mr. Ambassador.
That's right. Oh, you're like, I have immunity. And so I'm an ambassador. Like, no.
No, it doesn't work. Doesn't work.
Well, so you're thinking about all your great programs you've done and how many children's lives you've touched. There could be astrophysicists out there almost that are solely because of you.
You never know. That's the thing.
Yeah.
And so there has been a lot of talk about, you know, what's the power of the field trip? When kids go on these visits to planetariums and science centers and that type of thing, if they go for once a year or one time in their lives, does it really have an effect? And the more that I am around this, the more I see like they really get inspired. They really like feel something about this. They were like, it's out of their normal everyday school programs. Mm-hmm. And I think it has a big impact. And so, where I got started was working at a planetarium. So this was this little planetarium that seated about 18 people at the most.
18 people?
Yes. So we brought out these folding chairs.
Was it at someone's house? That's
it
tiny,
was very tiny, wow. Very tiny. So it's in the Cincinnati parks called Burnett Woods, and this little planetarium machine with it's like a 12-sided dodecahedron with a light bulb in the center and holes poked in the dodecahedron. So they would come out into the, onto the ceiling like where the stars were.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd unpack the folding chairs and put the chairs around the machine. We'd turn the lights out and then the stars are up on the ceiling.
That's pretty.
And so that was my first experience teaching astronomy. And it's pretty cool because you could put some music in there. It's so dark. It's like slightly scary, but kind of cool. And then when your eyes get adjusted, then you can really see the stars and constellations, how they're supposed to be. Now, this is really low-tech stuff, as you probably can imagine. I had a tape deck, and I'd press play, and then the 2001 music would come on, and then it'd say, flip tape to the other side. No, not quite that bad, but I'd press stop.
This side has ended.
That's right. There was no remote control to it. But apparently the one before me used a record player.
What?
So they had a record player backstage that they would like play into the thing.
They were speeded up to like get people like all freaked out.
Or then do some scratching. That'd be pretty good. But
like DJs.
This is a That was terrible. That was really bad.
Really
obviously
bad.
I have no DJ experience.
Clearly not. Just the band experience as discussed.
But that was pretty cool just because what it made me do is since we didn't have technology, all we had was the stars on the ceiling, you had to really get into the stories and the mythology behind these constellations. And I thought it was just so fun because the lights are out and the kids have to use their imagination to connect the dots and make pictures up there. And I thought that was a lot of fun to do. I kind of miss doing those planetarium shows. I need to call them up. It's a lot of fun.
Call them up. Well, you work at the observatory now. Don't get me started on this. Planetariums v. Observatory.
About 5 years ago, I said, can I do another show there just for old time's sake? And they're like, yeah, sure.
They're like,
do you still have
the tape deck?
Yeah, they still have the tape deck that I probably...
Some things never change.
Exactly.
Well, this is really like this sort of wistful look back on your beginnings in informal education, but I'd like some dirt.
The dirt.
I want to know the really, really tankers, really bad programs.
I know. You got to come across some every once in a while.
Yeah, you've had some. Come on.
I have.
Kids are
they're not all. They're not all gems, and every group is so different. You could do the same topic and talk about the same stars and constellations or the moon, and each time you do it, it's different because the audience is slightly different.
Yeah.
You can read how if they're into it or not into it or what they like and what jokes they like and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had a couple bad ones, that's for sure. There's two that stand out. In all these years of doing these programs, I've had to stop two of them.
Just straight up be like...
Straight up stop them.
Regus out.
I'm talking about the moon and I'm like... I give them a little warning of you guys got to pay attention. What are you guys doing? We're talking about the moon up here. I know this is like the most exciting thing in the world, but
to you, it actually is. So you're like, don't be punks.
That's right. And so I give them a couple warnings, and then I just said, okay,
wait, real
show's
quick.
Over, that's fellas. Right. And I packed up my stuff and I left.
Can I just really, I'm sorry, just real quick before we get to this,
yes.
the more of the stories here or the more information, what's the, share with the audience the trick you do when there's kids talking.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. See, now I've learned all the tricks. There's all these different voice
and
tricks.
And you pass them on.
Oh, yeah. I try to. You of course, you want to vary your speed and your way you deliver your volume. Sometimes you talk louder, then you get a little whispering, and then it draws them in like that. See, like that.
Totally.
But I think the one you're thinking about is the one, if a kid is acting up, you stand next to them. You
don't
say anything.
Address it, right?
You do not even look at them. You just stand next to them. And your proximity, they will start to be like, what's this dude doing standing next to me? And it's like, then you get a little closer. And then there's a fine line. You don't want to get too close, that's for sure. But you get to that line where they notice you and everybody is watching you and watching them, and then they are very quiet. It's a nice non-verbal way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
You never yell across the room at a kid,
right.
At anybody. That's you never do that.
No,
that's what we.
But
learn.
I love that you just silently, slowly walk right towards them. I think you should maintain and lock eye contact with them, and just as you're walking
over,
walk
right over there.
And here I am.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So you had to get up and just. just leave at two different times.
So one of them was at a school, and the teacher had no control over the kids whatsoever. And really what it was the teacher that did it, because the teacher was talking to another teacher out loud and not watching the kids.
She?
And so I just I said, okay, well, thanks for having me, guys. And I just packed up my computer. I packed up my thing, and I left with about 20 minutes left in the show the day. And I said, see ya.
Did she notice you'd gone?
I don't know if she did, actually. The only other one was at the planetarium.
Oh, back in the beginning then.
Which is even tougher to do because here's people that paid to come to a planetarium show. And I mean, it was just rowdy in there. And plus, it's such a small planetarium.
Yeah, 18 people.
So I'm like, and I'm trying to stand behind them, but it's dark, so they can't see me.
I don't care,
so
right?
Didn't work with that. So I couldn't try that trick. And so then I just said, okay, so if this continues, we're going to end the show. And they continued. And then I just turned on the lights and I said, thank you very much. The door's over that way. And that was it.
Oh, so
it was
snap.
Now, it takes a lot to get me to that point. That's
for sure.
Because I've seen a lot of stuff. I've seen a lot of Tood. I've seen a lot of Sassmouth.
Yeah,
I've seen a lot of those things.
Wow.
Like that. It's hard to surprise me because I've heard almost every question. I've seen every amount of attitude and every form. It's
chuckling about Uranus.
We've
heard it all.
Oh my gosh, you've seen it all. So out of all that, it's really hard to rattle me.
It's hard to actually anger you in a lot of ways.
That's true. Because
I've tried.
Boy, have you
really
tried.
Tested the limits.
Oh my gosh.
So you must have really been over it.
Yeah, yeah. But again, you don't get mad. You just feel like, well, you know, I got better things to do. The universe is, but it makes me feel sorry because it wasn't necessarily the kids' fault. But it's just like you want to, you know, share everything with them. And so I'm glad it's such the few and far between.
That's right.
Of all the, I mean, I don't know if I've done 150, 200 programs a year for 20 years.
Yeah, we need to tabulate how many total that is.
Only two out of a couple thousand.
That's
not bad. So, but I mean, so many of them have been really, you know, good too, because like kids are like, oh my gosh, I've been watching the stars and like, mm-hmm. and then success stories, people coming back to me later and say, you know, this really influenced my life. And, just from your attitude about this has been, really changing how I see things. And the other thing is, I think adults are getting into this too.
Oh, heck yeah.
I mean, this isn't just for kids that are trying to find something. This is for adults trying to find hobbies in their adult life and ways to belong with clubs and organizations.
Oh, yeah.
And it's one of those things. Now, so you've had a little experience. You have a favorite group you've worked with over the years as they come through the observatory?
I really feel like lucky that we get to show people around and show them such a cool space, because even if we're having like a crazy day or it's really busy or we're kind of like, you know, seeing people really excited to come in is really just fun. So I really like, I do have to say, I like when like little girls come in and they want to be like, we actually had I think it was two summers ago, a dad brought in his two daughters and they were really into space, and it was a daytime thing, but he was like, I just wanted to kind of bring them in. And we have a STEM exhibit about women in STEM. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of really great women in STEM that have made some exciting contributions. And it was a fun group to lead around. Not that boys aren't fun, but it's kind of cool how many girls are getting involved too. And I just like to be able, not that I'm a woman in STEM, I just happen to work in the building.
Tangentially, but, yes.
That's right.
Yes.
But I just, it's a fun place to work, and it's fun to get people's excitement, to get them excited about it and then feed off their excitement too.
Yeah,
so that's really
cool. I mean, and it just, seeing their eyes light up when somebody looks through a telescope, that's what really is pretty cool to see.
For sure.
Well, so I think you've definitely volunteered to do more programs. That's what I heard. I think we all heard that, didn't we, everybody?
Let's do this.
Awesome. So I've been part of the Solar System Ambassador Program through NASA for a lot of years, and it's a great way to involve people in the space program and to be part of community outreach projects. We're so excited to welcome the coordinator of the program, Kay Ferrari, to Looking Up. Well, Kay, thanks so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure, Dean. Thank you for inviting me.
So I think this program has probably the best name in all of NASA's all names, Solar System Ambassadors. I mean, it just has this weight to it. It's so good. How did it get started?
It actually started 21 years ago as the Galileo Ambassador Program. It was part of the Galileo mission, and this is something you probably don't know about the program, but it was a person who became an ambassador after the program started who actually gave Leslie Lowes the idea to start the program. He had attended a Galileo Educator Workshop in Florida, and he was so inspired. He said, I wish there's a way that I could take this information back to my community and share it with them. And that was what inspired Leslie to start the Galileo Ambassador Program. And one of the first applicants they had was Tom Estill from Vermont, who is still a solar system ambassador after 21 years.
Oh, wow.
Wow. That's incredible. What is NASA's role then in the Solar System Ambassador Program? Kind of what are they, what's their administration of it?
Well, NASA funds the program, and NASA personnel also provide the training and the materials for ambassadors to use in their events.
Nice.
So, what are the goals that you see with the program? What's the when it was started? What was the whole intention?
The goal is that at the time it started was the goal was to share information about the Galileo mission, and as the mission started winding down, then other missions wanted to buy into it, and they decided they would give it a more generic name, and Solar System Ambassadors was thrown out there, and that's the one everybody liked. So then the goal became to share information about solar system missions. And as the program went on, that became very popular. And then NASA decided that we wanted to go beyond the solar system and include universe missions and human spaceflight and aeronautics. So now the goal is to tell the story of NASA.
And all the solar system ambassadors, these are all volunteers that go out into the community and do education, and that's they're all volunteers?
They are all volunteers, and they go out, and they not only go to schools, but they find ways that the community, that works with their communities to tell the story, and it's public engagement at its best. So they could go to senior citizen homes. They do a lot of events at libraries. As it started off also with going out within the community and doing these types of events. And then as it caught on, ambassadors were being asked to do things other than just direct with the public. We have one ambassador who has written a column for her local rural Georgia newspaper for 14 years now.
Wow.
And
wow.
Every 2 weeks, another column, and she tries to direct it to the interests of her community. They even make requests now.
Wow.
Somebody will see her on the street and say, hey, I'd like to hear more about such and so mission. And she'll go and write an article about it. The schools use it for current events, the column. The ESL teacher there uses the column for her students to, as they're learning English to read.
Hmm.
And it really serves the community well. As one of our supporters from NASA headquarters in the very beginning said, Solar System Ambassadors is a grassroots program. We're going to plant the seeds and watch them spread.
Oh.
And they have.
I'm really surprised, Kay, that Dean's description, the offering that he kind of said, wasn't a little more editorial, because Dean is a solar system ambassador, isn't he?
Yes. Yes, he is, since 2001.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow. It's been that long?
Yes, it has.
He's like, I had no idea.
Oh, well, I knew it's been a while, but I didn't think it was 21. It was 20 years, so I knew it was, I wasn't there from the beginning.
I'm just waiting for you. There are these devoted citizen scientists. I was waiting for you, like, you to have a little more of a trumped up, like, sort of an intro to it, Dean. But that was a great description that Kay gave. I love that story of the woman doing a column in her paper. Kay, that's really neat. Are there other kind of stories? Well, you kind of gave some other good examples, but any stories like that stick out in your mind that are successes of the program?
Well, this one gets better. The story from Georgia gets better.
Oh.
A few years ago, I was calling references. Our application period is coming up on September 1st, and a few years ago, after it had closed and I was calling references, I called a woman in Georgia. Another woman had applied. And she was talking to me, she says, you know, our subscribers, she runs a online service for the blind and print impaired.
Hmm.
They have volunteer readers who read articles from local newspapers and magazines, the things that come and go quickly. And then their subscribers can listen to that the reading over the internet. And she said, you know, there's this woman who writes this column in another town. And she said, it's so popular with our listeners that they want more NASA content. So that's why Christine was applying to become an ambassador. And I asked her, does this woman who writes the column know that you read it for your listeners? And she said, no, probably not.
Oh.
And she didn't. She had no idea that for all the time she'd been writing the column, there was another audience that was hearing it.
Yeah, you never know with things like that.
That is cool. I love that.
So how can somebody apply to be a solar system ambassador? What's the process?
The process is we have an announcement of opportunity and an application form that will be available on September 1st, and it will be there on our website and through September 30th. And I know you're going to ask me what the website address is.
We can post that later.
Yeah, we can post the link.
They just look up Solar System Ambassadors. Yeah. It'll get there.
That's probably the easiest way to do it, is just go to a search engine and put in Solar System Ambassadors and NASA, and it'll come up. And on the left-hand side, there will be a tab that reads AO/application. Click on that, and you'll be there. In fact, that was what another ambassador told me he did. He said, I came to a point in my life when I knew I wanted to do volunteer work. So I typed in volunteer and NASA. I thought it would be nice to do something, volunteer for NASA. The first thing that came up was Solar System Ambassadors. He applied, and he's been an ambassador ever since.
Oh, that's nice.
And how many ambassadors are there right now?
Right now, there are 910.
Wow.
From
almost every state or
Is every state represented?
Every state is represented.
Oh, that's great.
And some territories.
Oh.
And we have a few ambassadors who are at military bases overseas or at consulates who do their outreach there.
That's dedication.
Oh, this is so great, Kay. Thanks so much for talking to us today. Hopefully we'll get some applicants coming your way. I know we have a new person from the observatory, Katie, that's on one of the Solar System Ambassadors, and hopefully we'll get some more.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks so much for joining
Thank
us.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Kay Ferrari, coordinator of NASA's Solar System Ambassador Program. You can find a link to the program on our website at wvxu.org/lookingup.
So, as mentioned, Dean has worked with we said thousands of programs.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so many. And in that time, you've gotten a lot of great questions from kids, and the kids say the zaniest things. So as our kid question for this episode, we're going to kind of flip it around a little bit. And we get a lot of parents that say, you know, my kid's really into astronomy, and they want to know kind of what's the next step. How can I get them more involved? How can I, you know, help foster this? So maybe you could speak a little bit to the parents and the kids about, you know, how to become an astronomer.
Yeah, yeah. And this could be for any age. If you're even an adult and looking for a second career or a start over, it's the same thing as kids. How to become an astronomer. That's a tricky question because there's a lot of different paths you can go with this. The path that I took was the education path, that I wanted to be an astronomy teacher. So I don't do research. I'm not involved in the, you know, the instrumentation and mechanics behind it. So I just am a communicator. And so getting an education background is definitely important for that. A teaching degree can help as well. But then if you want to be a research scientist, then you've got to go to one of the really good universities that focus on this. These universities that work with the big scopes in Arizona and California and Hawaii and Chile and Australia. And so then you have to, well, you have to get into math. That's for sure. Math is the big entryway into the field.
I mean, math is cool.
Yeah, math is cool. Come on.
It's the coolest.
It is cool. That's what happened to me. I ran into Calc 2 and that was it. I was like, maybe I'll just talk about it instead. Because that's usually what I do with hardcore scientists and researchers. Mm-hmm. I say, okay, explain that to me again, a little slower. And then I try to, you know, relate it to what others can understand, too. Because if they can't explain it to me, then we got some problems. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But so then that's the way you go into research astronomy is either be an astronomer, a major in astronomy, or astrophysics. That's a good way to go into it, too, because astrophysics, then you have a little more variation and stuff that you can do.
And we've had an intern, Zach. He is an astrophysics program
exactly.
And just got his PhD, which is cool.
Exactly, exactly. And so then there's the idea of, well, you can go into engineering, too, which is a kind of a side job of astronomy, but really, really important because there's all these NASA missions that are going up. And we need really well-trained engineers to actually make these spacecraft. We need to, and the instruments go behind it. And so it doesn't seem like that.
I did not think about that.
Maybe it's not like a super glamorous job, but you can be part of somebody that designs a rover that goes to Mars, or you could be part of mission control or those type of things, or communications. And
that's cool.
And man, are we lacking of engineers out there. So out of the three, astronomy teacher, research astronomer, engineer, the more lucrative, if you want your money back after school, engineer. That's what I do. That's for sure. So parents out there, if you're looking to save
your second career,
looking to save some money, boy, because they always need engineers. That's what we always need more of out there. Astronomers are the Neil deGrasse Tyson says we're one in a million. That's how few there are in the world.
Do you mean a dime a dozen?
Yeah, I think that's what I mean.
One in a million is not the same connotation.
Not dime a dozen. No, there's very few of us. There were the
one
few.
One in a million.
We're one in a million.
A few, not. I thought you were saying the norm. Okay.
No, there's a glut of astronomers with not enough astronomy jobs out there. So there's a serious competition for astronomy jobs, but engineering jobs, they need them. They need them. That's for sure. So that'd be the three ways I'd go.
Nice. Good advice. That's it for this episode of Looking Up. Thanks to Kay Ferrari from the Solar System Ambassador Program for joining us.
We'd like to hear from you. On social media, you can find us on Facebook. Just search Looking Up WVXU. And on Twitter, we're at Looking Up Podcast. You can also drop us an email at lookingup@wvxu.org.
We'd really love to hear from all of you about what got you interested in space or your favorite planet or any questions you'd like us to explore or topic suggestions. Send us an email or post on Facebook or Twitter.
Remember to subscribe to Looking Up wherever you listen to podcasts, and give us a rating and comment on iTunes. If you're new to Looking Up, you can always find all of our past episodes at wvxu.org/lookingup.
Our theme song and additional music is by Y, That's WHY question mark from their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, Josh Elstro is our engineer, and Jim Nolan provides additional technical assistance.
Thanks so much for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.